Our next speaker is Dr. Amy Williams. She has received her PhD in computer science from MIT, just finished a postdoctoral research position at Harvard, and is currently a postdoctoral research fellow at Columbia University. And her research deals with the intersection of genetics and computer science. She will speak on answering new atheism and seeking a sure knowledge of God. Dr. Williams.
It's an honor to be here today. I have a background in computer science and I study genetics, but my talk today is somewhat philosophical in nature and talking about science very broadly. I want to mention that a lot of my friends are atheists, and this talk is not intended as an attack on atheism, but there is a growing movement called New Atheism that is very hostile towards religion and belief, and it's towards that movement that I wish to critique today. And I also want to mention that if you have any leanings towards doubt of God, I hope that this is helpful to you. And if you interact with atheists, most are very well-meaning, good-natured individuals, and there's no need for hostility. So start with a couple definitions. Atheism, you're probably all familiar, is the belief that there is no God. New atheism was characterized a few years ago in an article by CNN. It's quoted here. It says, it's the view that religion should not simply be tolerated, but should be countered, criticized, and exposed by rational argument wherever its influence arises. Many prominent new atheists will argue, and it was mentioned earlier, that religion is an evil influence on society. And presumably that's one of the key reasons that they take on the stance that they do. Something I like to point out when I'm in a conversation with an atheist colleague or friend is what I have termed the paradox of atheism. That paradox is this. If there is no God, then there is no trustworthy authority, that is no God, to tell you that God is not there. So if we wanted to try to prove that there was no God, we could begin by trying to search all of the physical universe. But the universe is far too large, so you can't even, you can't search it and verify that there's no God. Moreover, you have to search more than just the physical universe. You have to search the realm of the spirit. And the number of ways in which one could search the realm of the spirit is quite large as well. So it's impossible to prove that there is no God. But in contrast, if there is a God, he can reveal himself to you. So logically speaking, atheism is completely unverifiable, whereas theism has the potential to be verified. And I don't want to oversimplify things. If we started searching the universe and we came across a being that said, I'm God, we might want to start asking some questions and make sure we really believe this. But it's still the case that, logically speaking, atheism can't be verified. And this is somewhat ironic because it's atheists that will often accuse believers of blind belief, but it's actually atheism that will always and forever be a blind belief in something that is unverifiable. So I'm going to touch on four different things today. The first thing I'm going to talk about is how I see faith and science as interrelated. Next, I'll talk about a few scientific-based arguments in favor of God. Then I'll talk about some new atheist messages, and I'll conclude with why I believe in God and in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So first, how do faith and science interrelate? Often faith is equated with blind belief, but that's actually not what it is. If you look in the dictionary, there are two definitions listed here. One definition is confidence or trust in a person or thing, or belief that is not based on proof. And in the Book of Mormon, we have the definition that it is hope for things which are not seen, which are true. Now, we all trust each other day to day, and so we all exercise faith. And an example of faith is believing that the sun will rise. I believe that the sun is going to rise tomorrow. It's risen every other day of my life, but I actually don't yet have proof sitting in front of me that the sun is going to rise. I won't have proof until tomorrow morning. And a freak thing could happen, such as a meteor hitting the earth and throwing out off of its orbit sufficient that the sun would not rise in the same way. I guess it would have to be a very large meteor, and this is a very improbable event. But suffice it to say that this is believing that the sun will rise tomorrow is an act of faith. But even more broadly, we all exercise faith in every purposeful act we undertake. A prosaic example of this is going to the grocery store. Anytime you undertake to go to the grocery store, you have faith in the location of the building, that you'll be able to get there, that there will be food inside, a cashier to take your money, reasonable prices, and that you won't get poisoned by eating that food. And perhaps there's even more faith when we go to school and study a subject. We have faith that the teacher is going to know more than us, that we'll be able to have a hope of understanding the subject, and that it will benefit our lives somehow by studying. Also in work, we have the faith that we'll be able to carry out the tasks that are given to us, that we'll be paid for those tasks, and that it's ethical to carry out that work. But bringing this into the realm of science, belief in scientific claims is also faith. So I assume that everyone here today and those listening believe that the Earth is round and that it revolves around the sun. And I also believe these things. But I've never actually verified them for myself. And I suspect that most people haven't done that either. So what I'm trying to say is that faith is not an intrinsically irrational belief or act. It is, in fact, essential to function in life. And without faith, we wouldn't do anything. We wouldn't bother getting out of bed because we wouldn't believe that we would be able to accomplish whatever it was we were undertaking to do, including the very act of trying to get out of bed. But not only do we exercise faith when we believe other scientists' claims, but the practice of science itself is an act of faith. Conducting experiments requires faith. It's often the case that experiments fail, and so what keeps scientists persevering? What keeps them persevering is the belief that their efforts will be fruitful and that they will learn from the experiments they conduct and ultimately gain some understanding of whatever it is they're trying to probe. So given this, I've just possibly shaken some of your belief in science. So why is it that science is given a special credence in society? Why do we view it as authoritative? The reason for this is that the claims of science are in principle verifiable. In research papers, scientists describe the observations they've made, the way they've collected data, and the analysis methods they've used. And in principle, I, as a third party, could go out and redo those experiments and be convinced of the same thing, or at least obtain the same results as the scientists have obtained in describing in their paper. But of course, this verification also requires faith. I need to obtain the education to be able to understand the research papers, and then I need to take the time and effort and also expend some money in performing the experiments and buying the equipment necessary to undertake them. So one of my favorite examples is what I mentioned a moment ago of verifying that the Earth revolves around the sun. I searched a while ago, and I found a website that describes a way in which I, as an individual, could verify that the Earth really does revolve around the sun. And this requires painstaking effort over a series of months of writing down where the stars are in the sky and where the constellations are. And ultimately, if I was to sit down, if I was so motivated and I made those observations, I would eventually be convinced that the Earth revolves around the sun by firsthand evidence and not just in believing other scientists. So now I'm going to talk briefly about a few scientific-based arguments in favor of God. And I want to begin by speaking to God of the Gaps arguments. Now, earlier this was mentioned, and the idea is that individuals will find gaps in scientific knowledge where we don't understand how things came to be, and they will claim that God must exist in this small gap of knowledge. This is problematic, first, because it paints God into a small part of existence, and second, because the gaps in our knowledge keep decreasing. Scientific research keeps progressing, and these gaps are shrinking. So if we were to put God in a gap, then he may ultimately even disappear. But I actually feel that God doesn't exist in the gaps of knowledge. In fact, I think scientific discoveries reveal God's handiwork. When we discover a scientific truth, we are discovering how God works. He underrides all of existence, and he does things in very ordered, logical ways. The scientific laws, the laws of physics, and all of the rest are how God has ordained existence to be. So now I'm just going to talk very briefly, and I'm going to touch on some counter-arguments to this about physical evidence for God. So the Big Bang happened. It happened at there was some beginning to existence, and we don't understand much about how this happened, but it was a very ordered ordered happening, and it was sufficient to bring about a universe in which life could begin. And then a few of the physical constants point quite strongly, and again, I'll talk to some counter-arguments to this in a moment, but point quite strongly to what's called the fine-tuned nature of the universe. So the gravitational constant, every physical object is attracted to every other physical object with according to the gravitational constant. If that constant were different by an amount of a billionth, 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 a very small fraction different, then stars could not exist. Also, the critical density of matter, if matter were only 10 to the minus 60th, a very, very small fraction different than it is, then either the Big Bang would have collapsed in on itself because gravity would have pulled in all of matter, or all of matter would have expanded and you could not have had stars forming. And this, these constants have actually caused scientists to say very striking things about a creator. So Sir Fred Hoyle was a physicist, many years ago said, "A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces we're speaking about in nature. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question." That's a very striking statement, and he didn't believe in God in the way that we in the LDS Church do. He believed in a super intellect. And, you know, I actually think that he may have changed his mind if he'd lived long enough to see some of the theories that I'll talk about in a little bit. But it's still an interesting set of facts here. So now I want to talk through some new atheist messages. And the reason I want to speak to these is that it can be easy when one encounters some of these messages to feel one's faith shaken. And I've certainly had that experience. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about these things and done so in an effort to try and understand how to answer to these questions, because I do think that they're reasonable questions to raise in the context of religion. So one counter-argument, a very prominent counter-argument to religion, is comparing belief in God to belief in something that we know to be false. So here I've shown the flying spaghetti monster. So there are individuals who, I assume in jest, claim to believe to belong to the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. And they say, "My belief in this being is on equal footing with God. Therefore, you know, there can't be a God because you need to supply me with some evidence." This is an equivalent argument to Russell's teapot. So Bertrand Russell was an atheist several years ago, put forth the claim that he believes that there's a teapot orbiting the sun, and since individuals can't prove him wrong about this teapot, then that's on equal footing with claiming that there's a God. So in summary, they're asking for some evidence before they'll believe. My response to this is that a show me attitude towards any claim actually doesn't yield insight. When I claim, or when an astronomer claims that the Earth revolves around the sun, I could stand here, let's say someone was making that claim to me, I could stand here all day and say, "Well, I won't believe it. You got to show me some evidence. I see the sun every day, it rises, and it's clear that it's revolving around the Earth." But the fact is that if I wanted to gain some insight on that question, I could follow through the methods that have been outlined and become convinced that the Earth really does revolve around the sun. And ultimately, this flying spaghetti monster is really about mocking believers and God, which doesn't prove anything, of course. And speaking of mockery, a very common tactic that is employed by new atheists is intimidation. And Richard Dawkins has encouraged those who listen to him to, when they encounter a believer, to come at them in a very combative sort of way and say, "Do you really believe in that Jesus walked on the water? Do you really believe in something cherry picking something that's maybe a little bit hard to answer?" Another thing that I've had many conversations with atheists over the years, and I've lost count of the number of times that I've been told that I'm delusional. And what I have realized in pondering that claim is that actually individuals who say that have no evidence that I'm delusional. And I guess I would kind of tend to argue that I have some evidence against that. I tend to function pretty well in society, and but moreover, it's quite presumptuous of someone to say, well, you're making a claim I don't believe or I don't want to believe, and so your mind is somehow messed up, and they're actually claiming to know my psychology better than me. So that's my response to those sorts of claims, is that they really don't have any evidence to make such a claim. Something I find quite sad is reading articles by great scholars that make false and overreaching statements. So this statement is not in that category. This is a setup. So Steven Pinker, who's a linguist and at Harvard, published an article a couple months ago, and he had a paragraph where he said that he started out and said, from science, we know that life began 4 billion years ago. The universe is 14 billion years old. Space and time don't fit our intuitions. All of this is in consensus with the scientific community, and all seems just fine. But then in the same paragraph, he goes on to say, and we know that there is no such thing as fate, providence, karma, or answers to prayers. And, you know, reading this, I found myself feeling like I wanted to ask them the question, how do you know? He started out with something very solid. And in the same paragraph, without missing a beat, he makes claims that for which he has no evidence, as far as I can tell. Another statement, now this is actually hearkening back a little bit to a talk that was given earlier about agency. And Jerry Coyne is a biologist at the University of Chicago, published an article a few months ago in the Chronicle Review, and the whole article is about agency and claiming that the laws of physics are deterministic, therefore the chemicals in your brain are behaving according to these predefined laws, and agency is an illusion. And in the midst of this article, he puts in parentheses this statement, it's possible, though improbable, that the indeterminacy of quantum physics may tweak behavior a bit, but such random effects can't be part of free will. Now, I want to say that I don't know for certain, and I don't mean to even claim that quantum physics is how free will operates, but for this person to say that physics is deterministic and therefore we don't have free will is in conflict with this concept that we already know and have good evidence for, that there is indeterminacy and randomness in physics. And I'll just mention that again, that randomness doesn't necessarily mean free will, but it's more complicated than this article was claiming. Now, scientific-based arguments are used against belief in God. Now, I study genetics, and I do believe in evolution, so let that be clear. But one thing I like to say, and this is a bit of a caricature, but one thing I like to say to summarize what people claim when they say that evolution contradicts God is that they're saying, we've looked at a bunch of fossils, and we're pretty sure there's no God. And, to me, that seems like a complete non sequitur. Now, again, that's a caricature. And so, to be fair, they're doing more than just looking at fossils. They're comparing them. They're estimating split times and this and that. But this doesn't disprove God. Just because there's a relationship between species doesn't mean that there's no God. The multiverse hypothesis, which was actually talked about earlier by Dr. Hellings, is used as a counter-argument to God. And I was able to sort of chat with him briefly at the break. And so the multiverse hypothesis says that in each moment there is a universe that comes into existence with different physical constants than our own. And given that if there are an infinite number of universes being created, then each one should have a different set of constants, and eventually we should arrive at one that have the constants that are right for life. And we are just lucky enough to be in a universe, in such a universe, that has physical constants right for life. So my response to this is, that may be so, but that doesn't mean that there is no God. And moreover, I'll just mention briefly that I'm told by an expert that the physical constants that are instantiated in this universe are actually quite unlikely to occur just by random chance. So it's not clear that selection could have operated to bring this about. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you why I believe in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and why I believe in God. And I actually believe that in the church we have a great thing, which is we have a very empirical-based belief system. So what do I mean by empirical? The dictionary definition is that it is derived from experience or experiment. When I was young, I was taught in the church that I could have a personal relationship with God and answers to prayer. That's an empirical thing. That's a firsthand experience with God. Now, it's somewhat complicated. Like I was saying earlier, I had to convince myself and be certain that this was really God. But I believed the people around me when they said that they had had such experiences. I didn't believe that they were lying to me. And so for a period of time, for a very long time, I didn't have that evidence of my own. But I put this challenge to the test, and I started to get some of these experiences. So how do we actually get these firsthand experiences with God? One of the most commonly repeated messages in scripture is found in Matthew 7:7, and again all throughout in different language. Ask and it shall be given you, seek and ye shall find. So what does this mean, or how do I see this? So Elder Neil A. Maxwell, several years ago, the late apostle in the church, said the Book of Mormon is something tangible and verifiable. Now what did he mean by this? Now, I don't know what Elder Maxwell meant, but I will tell you what I hear and understand from this. So first of all, if the Book of Mormon is verifiable, that's a scientific sort of claim. In Alma 32, we have the phrase, experiment upon the word. And in Moroni 10:4, we read the very last chapter of the Book of Mormon, ask God, the eternal Father, in the name of Christ, if these things are not true. And then it lists some conditions. Ask with a sincere heart, with real intent, having faith, and God will manifest it unto you by the power of the Holy Ghost. So let me boil this down in detail. So Moroni is reporting the methods he's used, and I'm putting my own words here on the observations. This may be different for other individuals, but I'll tell you my observations. So the methods that are used are, you know, you have to have a desire to know, and I'll say that I actually don't believe you have to believe ahead of time that it's true. You have to believe in the possibility. Just like when I go out and try and verify that the earth revolves around the sun, I don't have to believe it beforehand, but I have to believe that it's worth my effort to go out and actually do it. So you have to have a desire to know if it's true, and I think an openness to know. And then you have to study the scriptures, offer earnest prayer, and then you have to critically have a willingness to act on the witness that's obtained. And the observations that I've had are very peaceful and loving feelings from my Heavenly Father, telling me that He loves me and that He's there and that He has a plan for me. So the prediction from Moroni 10 is that God's Spirit and a witness from God can come to all who seek. So bringing this back a little bit and comparing this to science, knowing that the earth revolves around the sun takes a desire to know, study of the constellations and time. Knowing that the Book of Mormon is true requires a desire to know, a study of the scriptures, prayer, time, and an openness and willingness to act on what is given. And it is my testimony that God answers prayers to those who seek. So a couple take-home messages. We all live and act by faith and little else. If we have questions about a scientific claim, we can use faith and expend the effort to verify those claims. New atheism has not proven that there is no God. We shouldn't throw out truths we haven't already verified. And I have a little bit more to say on this, and if there's a time, I will. I have just a couple more slides. And then I and very many others have testified of God's influence in their lives. You can doubt my claims, and in some ways, I don't believe that doubt per se is a problem. Questioning and seeking are the fruit of a discovery. And finally, I just want to make a call for civility and respect in the dialogue on these questions. Thanks very much. Great. So, first question. When you are confronted by new atheists about your belief, What is your most effective method for to engage? How do you keep things civil and maybe even productive? So I think it varies. I've had experiences where I just basically don't say very much. If someone wants to pick a fight with me, I'll just kind of more quietly sort of state my case and then let them have their way and get upset if they will. But I think taking the position of wanting to really engage with the person and like listening to what they have to say and digging into the details of the questions that are being asked can make this a less combative sort of thing. I think taking the person very seriously, and listening to what they have to say is one of the things. I don't know if that's the best, answer, but. I have had the understanding that the definition of the scientific method believing in things which are seen or otherwise observable, which are true. Is this correct? How can I improve? Let's see. Let me think about this for a second. So I think that is correct. It's not always seen with your eyes. It's using instruments and things to probe reality, but it is physical. And I don't think this is incorrect at all. And I guess what I'm meaning to claim is that there is a spiritual realm that can be probed with instruments that we all possess, and that when we obtain, we can learn that is a trustworthy source of observation. I hope that answers. Okay. Using the correct definition of atheism, which is not a belief that there is no God, but rather a lack of belief in gods, how do you respond to the new atheist claim that we are all atheists in regards to 99% of gods and that they just go one God further? What secular evidence supports your idea that Yahweh is the most practical God? I cut some things. I had some slides that actually answered this. So, the question, here's my response to this claim that I'm rejecting 99% of gods, atheists go just a little bit further to 100%. My answer is that I actually believe in a divine being just like any other theist person on earth. That's a very different thing than saying that there is no God whatsoever. And I ascribe to God, Yahweh, very different, properties than somebody that believes in Baal or Thor, but we both would believe, if I was to interact with such a person, we both would believe in a divine being. So I hope that can answer your question. I don't think that this is a quantitative sort of question, I guess. So two more. How does one become certain that the response that they receive is really truly from God? Is this not solely a decision one makes is this not solely a decision one makes that the response is from God? Yeah, so I think this is a tricky question. And when I first started having spiritual experiences, this was a question I had. Is it possible that my mind was tricking me and that I was telling myself this was God? And I guess what I would say to a person that has this sort of question is, if you will continue to be faithful to the gospel of Jesus Christ or the light and knowledge you've received concerning God, and if you will ask God to prove himself to you, eventually he will. When you get to a certain level of commitment with God, he will prove himself to you in a way that is unmistakable. That is my witness, and that is my experience. As opposed to believing, is it possible to know that God is real? How does one make that transition? So, I would say that it is possible, and I think this is related to the previous question. And the reason I feel that it is possible is that God can do for you things that you will know personally could not be done by any other means. I don't know how to answer that without getting into details in my personal life that I think would be inappropriate in this sort of public setting. But I I will say that I've had deep and profound experiences where God has spoken to me and has done things for me and reassured me in ways that I knew could only have been from Him. And that is not a one-time thing either. These things for myself have to be replenished. I think knowledge grows with time, and I feel more solid today than I did when I was 14 years old and in terms of my belief and my knowledge of God, but it does continue to grow.
Thank Dr. Williams.